John Paul Morosi, MLB insider, the MLB Network. And John, I mean, I'm watching the MLB Network today, and I mean, they've got Mike Lowell talking about what it's like to hear yourself in trade rumors. Like, there's nothing going on, John. Make something happen. I'm counting on you to make something happen. I don't know where the hell Rosenthal is. I don't know what's up with him, but I'm counting on you to make something happen this week.
Well, Jeff, first of all, congratulations to Canada on the World Juniors. I was watching. What an entertaining gold medal game. I want to just make that. This is my first appearance since Canada won gold, and I want to show my respect to the champions. The U.S. won last year in Canada.
It's not even our property. We don't
win the Canadian contest.
It's not even our property. It's the red team's property. We don't talk about it. As far as we know, it didn't happen.
Jeff, hockey is your property. You are Canadian. All things hockey are your property, and so therefore,
don't say that hockey's my property. I had nothing to do with it. I had nothing to do with it.
Anyway. Well, congratulations, felicitacion to everyone.
Oh, there. Well, we'll accept your felicitations. And what's the Italian word? Buongiorno. What's the word?
Hey, well, there's a couple of different ones. You would say complimenti or congratulazioni. Either one works. So I will wish that to all my friends in Woodbridge and Vaughan.
Okay, I always take the words that have the fewer syllables because they're generally easier to say. As I get older.
So compliment. There you go.
Okay.
Compliment.
Because as I get older, the more syllables you add, you know, it's an age thing. More or less an age thing. So Ross Atkins was on Primetime Sports yesterday, the Blue Jays general manager, and more or less confirming that, yes, the Blue Jays do have an interest in Christian Yelich. I mean, he can't really say that because it's another team's player, but the point was essentially made that any team looking for offensive help and looking for outfield offensive help would probably be talking to the Marlins about Christian Yelich, and lo and behold, guess what the Blue Jays have a crying need for. I'm beginning to get the sense, though, and I'd be interested in what you're hearing about this, because, quite frankly, your sources would be a hell of a lot better than mine in this. But I'm beginning to wonder if maybe Derek Jeter's not going to cool his jets a little bit here and maybe start the year with, you know, again, if somebody comes along and makes you an absolutely just silly, stupid offer, then maybe a move Yelich. But I'm wondering if maybe he might just start the year with these two guys.
Yeah, Jeff, it's a great point, and the timing of all this is really interesting. We're, of course, now about a month away from camp's opening, and so the clock is ticking, and you really don't want to have a Yelich trade possibility lingering over spring training. I mean, typically, when you have a trade in spring training, it's for a lefty reliever or an outfield bat. It's not for a major all-star caliber piece. That's a rare spring training occurrence. Not to say that it doesn't happen ever, but these types of deals are usually done before camp opens. And you also wonder, Jeff, as well, as the pace of the free agent market. At what point in time do things pick up enough in free agency and maybe the prices drop down a little bit sufficiently that teams become a little less interested or urgent in terms of pursuing the trade option? So I think those are some competing narratives and timelines with respect to the calendar. In general, though, Jeff, I look at the Marlins, and as much as there may be some thought that Derek could be at least easing up on the accelerator towards the rebuilding process, there's no question the Marlins are committed in that direction in general. Once you've traded Stanton, once you've traded Osuna, once you've traded D. Gordon, you might as well complete the task here, and this seems to be right now before JD Martinez signs, before Lorenzo Cain signs, and there's this lingering anxiety about the prices on the part of teams. This is your window. Your window to trade him is now. Mm-hmm. And so I would say, unless Yelich is dealt before all these signings start to occur, and that by that I mean JD Martinez, Cain, Jay Bruce, Carlos Gonzalez, once that starts happening, I think that maybe the chances of a trade will diminish. But until that occurs, I still think we should all remain on relatively high alert for a possible Yelich deal.
Where do you think, you know, the Yankees obviously attracted a lot of attention in the offseason getting Giancarlo Stanton. That goes without saying. But, you know, they do have certain financial parameters that they're interested in maintaining this year, especially with, you know, with the luxury tax and looking ahead to next year's free agent class. What do you think happens to Jacoby Ellsbury? You know, it's a name. It doesn't get mentioned a great deal. You know, he's a guy that I think, well, quite obviously, is surplus to requirements for the Yankees right now. I mean, they're going to be in a position where they're going to be trying to figure out how to get Aaron Hicks at bats, and you know, that's a great issue to have. But I don't mind dealing with that, but I sure as hell don't want to have Jacoby Ellsbury and you know, Brett Gardner and those guys in that position as well, and try to figure out how I'm going to balance all those at bats. What happens to Jacoby Ellsbury? And if you were a team, would you take a shot at Jacoby Ellsbury if the Yankees agreed to pick up a sizable amount of that salary?
Well, Jeff, Ellsbury is certainly available, and by multiple reports, the Yankees would love to move him as a way to free up money and allow themselves to make a more meaningful upgrade, maybe a third base, someone like a Mike Moustakas, mm-hmm. for example. I don't get the sense that there's an abundance of interest right now in Ellsbury, especially given the number of outfield options that I just mentioned. I think that as long as you've got a robust free agent market at that position, your incentive to take on somebody who's over the age of 30 and relies on his legs and has really been marginalized in many ways, and I think you're absolutely right about Hicks becoming a more prominent member of that outfield, there's no real 500 plate appearance role for Ellsbury any longer on that mm-hmm. team, especially you still have Gardner in the mix. So you've got Gardner, Hicks, and then the two cornerstones, of course, they're going to mix around and play some DH as well. But Jeff, to me, I think Ellsbury is not even really he's basically is a fourth outfielder, if that, right now. So he is clearly available. And I have not seen enough of a difference-making explosiveness from him and even the consistency of being healthy, for that matter, with the injuries that he's had. I think his value is at a relatively low point. He is certainly available. But I question very much at the moment, given the amount of other alternatives out there, that there's going to be an abundance of interest in him. I would say this, though, for the Yankees in general. You look at the way that the free agent market has played out, and they've done a very good job of holding the line and putting themselves in a good position to stay under the luxury tax threshold for 2018. I think there's a way for them to get Todd Frazier. I do, given where his price point likely is going to be. Moustakas would be a bit more challenging unless they find a way to give up Ellsbury and clear up that payroll, or even a Brett Gardner for that matter. I think Gardner is a much more appealing trade chip, and if the Yankees are serious, if they're really serious about Mike Moustakas at third base, I think Gardner becomes a much more viable option. But let's bear in mind as well, Jeff, they're still talking about pitching.
Right.
And whether it's Gerrit Cole or Michael Fulmer, they've got a really nice farm system that's going to allow them to compete on just about any arm out there. So as we've discussed before, I know it's not great news for Jays fans, but the Yankees are in a very good position for 2018 and 2019 and 2020 and beyond.
Boy, I'd take Brett Gardner on my team for a couple of years.
Yeah, and I think that's the value with him, Jeff, I think has a much better chance of being actualized in a trade than for Jacoby Ellsbury.
You had a report yesterday on Major League Baseball Players Association and ownership, the commissioner's office, I should say, meeting this week to once again address the situation regarding pace of play. John, it really does seem, doesn't it, as if we are going to see a pitch clock and we are going to see a limit placed on mound visits to speed up games. You know, it's funny. I refer to MLB Network yesterday. Chris Dickerson and Mike Lowell were on, and it was an interesting discussion because Lowell was making the point, and Mike Lowell, by the way, for people, is a terrific analyst, but he was making the point that, you know, so many teams now are employing sports psychologists. They're employing mental coaches. I mean, the Jays have one. And he said, you know, one of the things you hear is sort of stay in the moment, take your time, collect your thoughts. And Mike's point was it's going to be interesting seeing how that trend among Major League Baseball teams, how that dovetails with the notion of speeding up the game. Because you've got a generation of players now who are used to getting used to the pitch clock because they've been in the minors, But then when they get to the majors and they start talking to these, the, you know, the mental conditioning coaches, it's almost like you're working across purposes. I found it a fascinating take from a guy who was a former player. And I'm wondering if you think, John, at the end of the day, that as much as Rob Manfred has made it clear that he wants to put the pitch clock in here, do you think maybe he may just decide to split the difference and say, you know what, I'm not going to go with the pitch clock right away, but I will. I do want to limit mound visits and you know, maybe win half the battle and position myself to win the rest of the battle next year, as opposed to charging up the hill all at once.
Jeff, to me, I actually think the pitch clock has a higher chance of being implemented as MLB would like it to, and actually is probably, of the two topics, the one on which there is a greater level of agreement with
really?
The union.
Okay.
Because of what you mentioned. Yes, because a couple things. Number one, as you mentioned, players that are now coming up into the big leagues that have spent a couple of years in the minor leagues here since the pitch clock has come into being, you've got now an increasingly large percentage, and it's not a majority yet, but it's creeping that way, that have lived with this in the minor leagues. They're used to it. And so it's not really a fundamental change for them. Also, this is very important to point out as well, the minor league rule, as it is written, allows the pitcher to restart the clock by disengaging with the rubber or faking a throw to second or third. So when you think about that, if you've got a concern and you're on the mound and you're not ready to deliver your pitch, just step off, and then the clock will restart. But you have in your back pocket the ability to restart the clock at any time you want. So you really should never allow yourself to be charged a ball, because there's a mechanism for you to do that. Now, it's not really something you can do when there are no runners on base, which is sort of the point. When you're out of the windup, when there are no runners on base, you really have no excuse. You should be able to work at a good pace, and I think that as long as baseball can find a way to work on that, let's at least work on it with nobody on base. You should be in a better rhythm at that point in time anyway. Let's just get the ball and go. Be, you know, channel your inner Mark Burley and find a way to do that. Mm. I think that is number one and the more mutually agreeable topic. The other one on mound visits is interesting. MLB last year wanted to do one mound visit per pitcher per inning from the catcher.
Okay.
The concern on the part of the union, and again, they're talking about this week in New York, the concern is player safety and even umpire safety, because the reason for so many of these mound visits often is to cycle through your series of additionally masked signs when there's somebody on second base who has now seen multiple sets and multiple series, multiple at-bats, and knows now what to expect and can relay that to the batter at the plate. The concern then becomes, okay, well, if I've spent my one mound visit and I believe the guy on second base is relaying signs to the hitter at the plate, what do I do? Do we have a big cardboard cutout in the dugout that we point to, and that's, this is your first answer key, your second answer key, your third one, like you do in a college football sideline to save the time? Does the catcher walk out and say, we're going to go to our third set of signs? Well, then you're hoping everybody remembers, and you have no chance to regroup. And guess what? If the catcher gets crossed up, here comes a 99-mile-an-hour fastball instead of a 87-mile-an-hour slider, and who's going to wear it, either the catcher or the umpire? Neither of which really want that to happen. So I think that's the question that I have, and that's the question I think a lot of people in the union have. How do you make sure everybody's on the same page without a mound visit in a way that is keeping with rules that already exist concerning signs and what is acceptable to do? Because if there's indecision, that affects the mentality of the pitcher, of the catcher, and it could well influence the health of the catcher and the umpire. So that is, I think, what they're talking about right now. The pitch clock, nobody's going to get injured because of a pitch clock. Mm-hmm. I think the larger concern, Jeff, is what happens when there's a cross-up on signs, and that is a substantial concern, especially in a time when we're candidly very aware of concussions and what a 99-mile-an-hour fastball can do to a catcher or an umpire.
John, I want to circle back a little bit to free agency. The Kansas City Royals with Lorenzo Cain, Mike Moustakas, and Eric Hosmer, three cornerstone players out there as free agents. as this goes on, or if this kind of this dry period goes on, do you think it increases the chances of one of them, i.e., and I'm thinking in particular Hosmer, re-signing with Kansas City? And I'm going to branch that out a little bit because Lorenzo Cain is a guy who, you know, profiles as somebody who might help the Blue Jays. What do you think Lorenzo Cain's looking at in the market right now? So I know there's two different questions there, but kind of springing out of the Kansas City Royals free sure. agents.
Yeah, I do agree, Jeff, that the longer this goes on, there's the higher chance that one of them will return. Hosmer, we know that is the one that they've been courting most aggressively, and according to Bob Nightingale, they've already made that 7-year offer. It's interesting, though, because if that was his priority, to go back to Kansas City, and if he had this really healthy 7-year offer, you would imagine he would have already signed it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he's waiting to see if the Cardinals will get involved in a more meaningful way. Of course, the Cardinals have a better chance to win the World Series in the next few years than the Royals do. But that to me is what's going on there. And I think if they don't get Hosmer, then perhaps Cain becomes the next most likely piece for them.
Okay.
And I think that they have, on the left side of the infield, they have more options. So I think Moustakas is probably, of the three, the lesser priority. I think Cain, you look at what he's been able to do, and again, he's another player that relies to some degree on his speed, but he can also hit in the middle part of your lineup when warranted. I think he'd be a great fit for the Jays in so many ways, probably as a corner guy with Pilar staying in center. But I think Cain is a, you look at the AAV, I think he gets every bit what Dexter Fowler got last year from the Cardinals. And so I think that obviously is a deal that the Jays know well, because they had also pursued Dexter Fowler. So I think Cain gets something similar to Fowler. And again, we're seeing a real diminishment in the overall interest from teams in multi-year contracts, which could certainly have a big impact on things. We saw with Wade Davis, for example, with the Rockies, he got the AAV. He didn't quite get the longer term, but he got the average annual value of what he was looking for. So I think, and of course, he's had a record there. So the AAVs have been healthy for Carlos Santana, for Wade Davis. But as we speak today, Jeff Blair, we have not seen a single contract this offseason in excess of 3 years.
Mm. Yeah, it'll be fascinating to see if Lorenzo Cain, in this market right now at that level, the Blue Jays have to have some interest in him. They have to.
Sure. And again, I think that we've talked a lot, Jeff, about the overall direction of the Jays and what they should do. And we've talked a lot about Donaldson during the course of the offseason. I'll repeat what I said last time we talked, that in my conversations, I've detected no active dialogue for them to trade him. So if that's the case, if they're going to keep Donaldson, then you, on a certain level, owe it to the rest of your group and to the fans to try to make one more run at this thing. That's why they brought in Solarte. He's a type of player that you add to a team that's going for it, not one that's rebuilding. And I think the question on Yelich, I'll leave you with this, we can keep talking about it. But I think that my thought about Yelich is will the Jays be encouraged enough by the amount of years left on Yelich's deal and the multiple years of control at a pretty club friendly price point to include a Bichette or a Vlad Jr. in that deal? Mm-hmm. Would the Jays do a straight up with Bichette or Vlad for Yelich? And if the answer is no, okay, I would understand that. But if you're serious about trying to win a World Series now, before the Yankees truly become that next dominant force in the American League, you have to at least think about that, because of the fact that you have multiple years of control left on Yelich. He is not a rental, and that you'd have to at least give some thought to giving one of those top prospects up in that deal.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because, you know, one of the things I wanted to do at the winter meetings was sort of just suss out, you know, the possibility of what the Jays may be thinking with their prospects. And I mean, I came away thinking there's no way in hell they trade Vlad Guerrero Jr. But I'll tell you what, you know, if you're going to get 3 or 4 years of Christian Yelich at a club friendly rate, I think they would absolutely consider moving Bo Bichette.
And
that's just based on talking to people around the team. I'm not saying that they're shopping him, but if it, you know, I think there's a way forward there. I absolutely think that the Blue Jays would consider him. I think The Jays won't say this, but I think they envision Vladdy being in the lineup at some point during the season, whether it's July or June or whatever. But yeah, Bo Bichette, absolutely, I could see him being moved.
Yeah, and that's I would say, Jeff, that I think you're right on about Vladdy being a bit ahead of Bichette in the overall prospect rankings. And the only question with Vlad's going to be, where is he going to play? Mm-hmm. There are those if you pulled five different scouts on this show today and brought them all on and said, where do you think Vlad's going to play? You're probably going to get five different answers.
Yep.
There's a vast divergence of opinion about where he fits defensively. And on Bichette, listen, we saw what he did in the minor leagues this year, basically the minor league overall batting champ. But you know what? People at the major league level think Yelich is going to be a batting champion at the mm-hmm. major league level. And he's already shown that skill at the major league level. So I'm a big believer. I think Bichette's going to be a really strong everyday player and maybe a multiple-time all-star. But I think Yelich is that too. He's already demonstrated it. And we've seen as well, you look at the Jays overall, Jeff, they're a team that, if you look at their outfield setup, they need Yelich today. They need him in a couple years because mm-hmm. he's a left-handed hitter and he can play all three. He's a really good defender. He can bat anywhere in the lineup. He can bat leadoff if you want him to. He can bat third. So there's a lot to like about what he can do. And I think if Christian Yelich was good enough to bat third for Team USA at the WBC last year, he's probably good enough for you to at least give some thought to trading Bo Bichette for him. If it's a one-for-one, I think that to me it's a great topic, and I think it's one the Jays have to give a lot of thought to if they are serious, truly serious. If they believe they have a chance to make the playoffs this year and really in their cores believe that they can do it, that's a trade they probably should make.
Yeah, and part of me has always kind of thought that with Bo Bichette, part of the thing with the Blue Jays is, and John, we've seen teams do this. My God, the Dodgers were the best at it. Teams will really talk up a prospect. You know, they'll really talk sure. up a prospect if they can get a deal done. I mean, the Jays, you know, people don't have to go that far. I mean, they left Franklin Barreto at shortstop, even though there wasn't anybody in the organization who thought he could play shortstop, just because they thought at some point in the span of a year they'd be trading this guy, and it was a hell of a lot easier to move him as a shortstop than it was anything else. And yeah, maybe an acquiring team didn't think he could play shortstop, but you know, part of the thought process was, well, geez, the Jays think he can play, so I mean, and they know him better than us, so maybe there's something there. So teams will do that. Teams will try to gin up the market for a minor league player, absolutely.
That's a very good point, and I'll be really interested during the major league camp portion of spring training for the Jays, where we see Bichette and Vlad Jr. on the field.
Yep.
And I think that to me, as they're now advancing more, I'm sure they're going to get into more major league spring training games this year and get a really good look at where they're at. And as you point out about Vlad, if there's that thought internally that he's going to be part of their lineup in 2018 at some point, then I think we're going to see him a lot, and we're going to see him bouncing around the field different places to see where he fits. Because what we've seen it with elite bats in the past. We saw it with Ryan Braun with Milwaukee. They had him playing third originally before they moved him to the outfield. We saw Miguel Cabrera come in with Florida in 2003. He mm-hmm. was a left fielder, then he moved to the infield later. You're not always going to be at your ideal position right away. Ryan Howard, for example, when Tommy was there in Philadelphia, same thing. So when the bat is ready, as much as there's a priority on defense nowadays, when the bat's ready, there is that urgency to find a spot for him. And especially with the power that Vladdy brings, I'm going to be really interested to see. I think it's going to be a fascinating spring training for the Jays on many, many levels. And I think that with the kids, those two names, assuming Bichette's not traded before then, I think that's going to be a really great part of all the conversation in Dunedin here this spring.
Good stuff as always, Mr. Morosi. Appreciate you doing this.
Thank you, and thank you for allowing me a brief mention of the World Juniors, my friend.
No problem.
I appreciate it, and again, my congratulations to all.
Okay, and I just find it remarkable that you spent more time talking about the World Junior Tournament in this segment than trading Josh Donaldson. You know I'm not going to let that go.
I know, I am being a servant of my information. The information is not going anywhere. Thus, I am withdrawing that topic from discussion. How about that?